The sun is going to rise every single day, no matter what. Some days are sunnier than others still, right? And so when you think about conscious discipline, some days we're more conscious and our discipline than others, but that doesn't mean that it's void. It doesn't mean that the sun didn't rise. It doesn't mean that I'm a conscious discipline educator. It means that I had a lapse in judgment. I need to go sit with myself. I need to have some reflection. I need to be in community with some other folks that do this kind of work. And so I can show up better the next day. And that's it.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your parenting, teaching, or leadership journey. And today, y'all, I have an episode for y'all. A lot of y'all know that I went to the Conscious Discipline Conference, and when I go to these conferences, I'm really listening and finding new people who are just out there in the field, talking, doing their thing. And this person really made an impression on me and how she talked about how she implemented conscious discipline in her school. And she's got these like real hard results, but also just the heart work that she's doing. And you can tell it's so authentic and it's real. And so I'm going to have her introduce herself, and then we're going to get started with the conversation. Go ahead, introduce yourself.
Hey, I am Tanyelle L. Hanna. I am an educator, and I am the principal teacher and learner at my school. I've been doing this work for about 16 years, so I'm really excited to share this space and time with you.
Okay, so you are a learner. You are the principal of a school. How large is your school, would you say? How many kind of like kids, classroom?
Yeah, sure. So I'm located here in Chicago. And in Chicago, our elementary schools run from preschool through eighth grade in one building. And so I have a little under 300 scholars between pre-K and eighth grade.
Between pre-K and eighth grade. That is such a wide range. Yeah.
It's a neighborhood school. So, you know, that's typically how it works here in Chicago. We do have some middle schools, and we do have some classical schools that will run from K to five or six, but typically your typical neighborhood school runs from pre-K to eight.
Okay. So what's your kind of philosophy? You do, you know, conscious discipline at your school, right?
I do.
How long have you been doing conscious discipline at your school?
Yeah, so I've been doing conscious discipline for about 3 years, almost the entire time that I've been a principal here. But I've served in other roles and other capacities that required me to lead culture and climate. So I have been a lead teacher. I have been a dean of students. I have been a resident principal. I have been an assistant principal, and now I'm serving as a principal. And so in all of those roles, culture and climate has been key. So I have had my fair share of programs or philosophies that should work for urban scholars. And, you know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But I think that this conscious discipline model is the one that most closely aligns to my heart space. And so we've been able to implement it here at my school. Now, I do want to say that we did not just roll it out full school right away. And so I want to call attention to that so that families, scholars, educators, villagers kind of just know that this is not an overnight process.
Okay, so like talk to us a little bit about what that process is, because I know I talk to a lot of teachers that, you know, are into conscious discipline, or maybe it's another philosophy. Maybe it's not conscious discipline specifically, but it's more of the kind of trauma responsive, brain science based, connection and collaboration based kind of learning. And not everyone's always on board with it. A lot of people, you know, I would say, you know, especially people who've been in the field for a long time, don't want to change the ways that they've kind of always been doing. And this is common in schools, this is common in households. And so, you know, I'm curious as to like, what was that process? And you know what, actually, we're gonna back it up a little bit.
Okay, okay.
I wanna know first, what was the process for you to buy in first? And then talk about the rest of it, because like you said, you've done a lot of programs, right? And it can be really easy to feel like, ah, this is just another thing. There's just another new fancy shiny program that you're wanting to like dangle in front of me. I'm already struggling like to keep my head up above water. You want to throw one more thing at me? Like, so talk to me, like, how did you get introduced into it and really like buy into it? What was that for you that you felt like aligned with you? And then talk to me about how you rolled it out to the school.
Okay. So those two things are a little bit intermingled. So for our school, it's about, it was really like a four-tier rollout. Let me say that I did not introduce this to my school.
Okay.
So at my school, I do something called distributed leadership, where I really allow educators to operate in areas where they shine, where they have an expertise, and then they lead other folks to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, I had a second grade teacher at the time. She came in and she says, I really feel strongly about this program. Can I do it? And so it was really just that simple. Can I do it?
Yeah.
And one thing that I know is that when somebody has a passion about something, I'm gonna at least take a look into it. I wanna see how does it work. What I first saw was a transformation in that teacher as a person.
Mm.
And I saw a change in the dynamics of her classroom.
Mm.
So oftentimes we don't want to start a new program for fear, right? For fear that something's gonna come in and then it's gonna leave out. We've invested all this energy. We're already tired. We have so many things to do. And now here you want me to start this new program that 2 years from now, we probably won't even be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to, at the time, I don't want to, I hate when folks use the word like struggling schools, but our school had a lot of areas for improvement. So I didn't have time to do like this uphill push with people. And so here's what happened. She asked me, could she do it? I said, yes. I wanted to see how it worked in her classroom. It worked well. It worked for her as a person. I saw a transformation in her as an adult.
Mm.
And then what she did was, I said, well, you got to get you a team together. Mm. Because what I don't want, people need to see that this works, because people will come up with these excuses as to why a thing won't work for children like theirs. Mm-hmm. So because she was a primary teacher, you know, you have to get, I coached her on how to create a team that would model this, that would go through a book study. So they went through a book study. She calls this her Coalition of the Willing.
Mm-hmm.
And so she got a couple of her colleagues together at different grade bands to go through the study, but also start implementing some conscious discipline activities in their classroom. So then people can, in an organic way, see a transformation in their colleagues' classroom before I, as a lead educator or the principal, force something on you that you really don't want to do. So what happens when people force something on you that you really don't want to do? You don't really have any investment in it.
Yeah.
You don't really, you know, and because this is social emotional work, it's a heart work. So if your heart isn't in it, you might as well not do it. And so what I wanted to do is give some time for people to really like have some authentic buy-in before I start trying to sell them something. I'm not a salesman. You know, I specialize in teaching and learning. I don't specialize in advertisements. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted to make sure that people had an opportunity to see if this really works and how does it work. And so even did the professional learning, and when we had our coaching sessions, I was a learner during that time. I allow my teachers to lead that work, right? So that we're all learning together. When we participated, when she did the book study, I was a participant in the book study. And if you, I do everything on the Google Drive. If you open up the Google Drive, you'll see all these different people's names because all these different people led different chapters of the book, Conscious Discipline. Mm. And we worked through it together. Then we started rolling it out whole school. And then our next step will be to roll it out to our villagers. I know you probably, I've used that word a couple of times, villagers. I use villagers as opposed to mom, dad, parent, because some of my scholars do not have their actual birth parent with them. And that can be a little triggering, right? I'm gonna call your mom, I'm gonna call your dad. You like, yes, please call them. I'd like to speak with them as well. So to take that out, to take that sting out, because anybody can be helping. Even there's nothing wrong with me, obviously, but my mom helps a lot with my daughter. And so my mom is part of my village. And so you can speak to her as well as you can speak to me, as well as her dad. So mm-hmm. I want to allow some space for children to have a healthy village and for us to converse and be kind of like all on one page, so that educators, scholars, parents, grandparents, the community, we're all going to be using one language, kind of all wrapping our arms around our babies to ensure their success.
Yeah. And I love
that. I know that was a mouthful.
No. I love everything that you said. I love the term using villagers. And I also, you know, loved your approach that you took to guiding this. Like you didn't, and this is what, you know, I talk about all the time, really being that guide, you know, instead of the sage on the stage, you weren't like, okay, I have this, you know, I have this thing that everyone's going to do, everyone needs to do it, or I have this brilliant idea. Like even sometimes I even see leaders kind of like take people's ideas, like, this is my idea, I'm going to lead it. And you gave the opportunity for other people to kind of step out front and lead, and you were just the facilitator, you were just the guide, just kind of keeping it all together and using your power to just facilitate, you know, their journey, right? And in that process, when you are guiding someone and you are taking the time to listen, you inevitably you will learn. And I kind of love how you were kind of, and another good thing about this too, is that it puts you, even though you have the most authority in the school, you aren't like waving your power around. You are showing how, you're modeling how to kind of be in the passenger seat, how to kind of just, how to listen and learn, right?
So two things with that. Number one, I had a boss who I thought was absolutely brilliant. And he said, Tanya, many hands make light work. Mm. So when you're talking about school turnaround, if you are waiting for the principal or the assistant principal and their leadership team to transform a school all by themselves, you're going to be waiting a long time. School turnaround typically takes at least 3 to 5 years. We turned our school around, well, we turned our school's data around in about a year. So that's pretty quick.
Talk to us about the data, because there are going to be some people that are like, all right, what's the data? How do we know that, you know, it works? I want some numbers to prove to me that the social emotional stuff works.
Yeah. So one of the things you can start with always is attendance. Why is attendance important? Attendance is important for teaching and learning because I cannot teach a child who is not there. Yeah. I cannot teach them reading, math, science, social studies, but I also cannot teach them how to be a good person. I cannot put social emotional skills in their toolkit. I cannot reach a child that I actually cannot see. With that, you have to understand that sometimes, and we can even see this as adult, people do things because of relationship, right? So I have this assistant, the assistant principal that used to be my assistant principal. If she asked me tomorrow morning to drive her to Africa, I would be trying to figure out how I could build a road to take her to Africa because of the relationship that she has developed with me. The same thing with children. When they know we are looking for them, when they know we want to make connection with them, when they know that we're going to miss them when they're not there, when they know that their classmates need them to really form that community, they want to get to school. And then once I have built a solid ground around social and emotional learning and skills, then I can fully attack the academic side. But it's really difficult to attack the academic side until you fully tackle the social emotional side. So I started with attendance. That was our big push, not just because of attendance and the attendance numbers, but because we want to make sure that if we want to move academics, we first got to move attendance because we got to get them in this building.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that in our network, so Chicago runs on networks. I think they're about 16 or 17. Don't quote me. And within each network, there are a number of schools. So in our network, there are about, at the time, there were 31 schools. Our attendance was among the lowest. Since we started really focusing on social and emotional learning and culture and climate, we have been number one for quite some time. And we fluctuate between number one and number three, but certainly not at the bottom. And so when you're talking about, I feel really proud about that for my team, because you're talking about moving during a traumatic time.
Yeah.
You understand what? So we were not just trying to maintain, we weren't just trying to survive, we were trying to thrive during a time when our peers were trying to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel really proud for them. I always big them up as you know, as we say, I always shout them out, because that was hard work, trying to build those connections and build culture and climate in a time where the rest of the world is, you know, going through such a hard time. But that's what you really want to do. And when you start talking about school family, school community, this got to be the place where they feel school connectedness. School connectedness means I have a family. School family means somebody looking for me, somebody want me there, somebody is depending upon me being in this space. And when you have that, then you can start talking about academics, and you can have some honest conversations. You can have some honest conversations about academics, because they know that it's coming from a true, genuine heart space and not a finger wagging space of you're not where you're supposed to be, and I can't help you if you don't help yourself. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to create a safe haven for kids and their families, honestly, and really for ourselves. So first thing I tackle is attendance. We also have something called On Track. So here in Chicago, On Track is attendance coupled with grades, or a grade point average. So we're also number one in our network for On Track right now. So not only are our scholars here, but they're learning. And they're not just learning because they got it right the first time. I think that culture and climate helps to create a breeding ground for grading equity. And so all of these things kind of feed into one another, right? And so it wasn't that they got it the first time. It was that somebody cared enough to ensure that they did master it eventually. So think about, if a kid gets an F, do you leave them hanging with this F, or do we reteach, reassign, create new spaces for scholars to say, I don't know, I don't understand, please help me, not just to an adult, but to their peers. You got to create space for that. You got to teach them how to have those conversations. That's learned behavior. Mm-hmm. And so I think that conscious discipline, as well as culture, climate, social, emotional learning, all of those things really, like I said, are the roots for us to create this tree of teaching and learning.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I hear you talking about culture and climate a lot, and that's, you know, and I have some leadership background too. And so like, culture is something that I really focus on a lot too. And, you know, culture really does drive everything, right? And so let me ask you this. A question that I told you about before, but okay, it just kind of popped in my head.
Okay.
You already kind of had some leadership. You already had kind of leadership training. It seemed like you already had this idea, all right, distributive leadership. And that was a, you know, a part of the culture. How did learning, kind of learning conscious discipline, impact the culture that you were creating in your school?
So what I heard you say was how did learning conscious discipline impact how
the culture that you wanted to create in this? Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that you'll hear a lot of folks talk about is adult SEL. And one of our very first coaching meetings, Rosalind talked about our CD-ROM and how our CD-ROM impacts how we engage with people. And children are people, but also we have to deal with ourselves. We have to deal with our colleagues and so forth. And really that kind of like, it hit me in my heart space in a way that made me very emotional, because it wasn't until that very moment of discussing my CD-ROM or thinking about my CD-ROM that I even realized how that might impact how I'm dealing with other people.
And just so people out there listening who aren't familiar with consciousness, CD, when she's saying CD-ROM, she's referring to kind of the mental models and the messages that we have in our mind that are run consciously or subconsciously. But go ahead.
Yeah. So for an example, when we're talking about our CD-ROM, I don't know. Back in the day, I know that some families of color, as a child, you couldn't say lie. So when I hear a child say lie, it's jarring, right? Mm. But was that child actually trying to be disrespectful? Is that allowed in their home? Or am I just putting that on them because that's part of who I am and how I grew up, right? So thinking about that, conscious discipline is an adult first model. Mm-hmm. So what I talked a little bit about in Florida, I talked about how I can't really address children until I address my adults, because if my adults aren't well, then my scholars can't be well. Mm. If I'm not well, then I can't model to my team how to be well. And so what conscious discipline made me do was really be conscious of myself as a person. It made me start humanizing my role, humanizing myself, humanizing my team, and humanizing children. Mm. Because I come from a Southern family, you know, and I have been, the way my personality is now, it has always been that way, which is a little difficult when you come from a space of sometimes where children are to be seen and not heard. You are not to talk back. You are not to ask why. You know, all of these different things that you're kind of raised with, and now you're starting to impart those things, maybe consciously or unconsciously, on other people's children. Mm-hmm. Not really making a conscious decision if it was right or wrong, if they were being respectful or disrespectful. You just know that when you grew up, it was disrespectful. And because it was disrespectful then, you now think that it's disrespectful, or you take it personal. Yeah. One of the first things that Jennifer talked about, Jennifer is the teacher at my school, Ms. Harris, talked about Q-tip. Mm. She's like, quit taking it personal. That's what something that we got from conscious discipline. Sometimes things don't have anything to do with us.
Yeah.
And so I guess the long and the short of it is that I really started thinking about, what does this look like from the adult side? And so when I thought about starting to roll it out with children, I never even asked them right away to start rolling this out with children. It was really like a thinking work, like seeing ourselves, identifying ourselves, understanding how composure works for us, yeah. You know, understanding how, you know, all of these different components of conscious discipline, like how does that even really, what does that look like in my own personal life? Mm-hmm. And then as an educator, I never really want, I don't buy into a lot of things that I couldn't do for my own child at home. And I have a gifted and talented child. Back in the day, I think they used to just say that all smart kids were gifted, and that's not so. I learned that as a mom, that gifted children, their brain works very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ways by which I was raised, I do use a lot of those, but also I really had to start putting some things in my own toolkit to be able to efficiently raise my own child. And when it worked on Hannah Joy, baby, I said, this is a winner. Because I feel like when you are thinking about if something is going to do well at a school or something that you want to see with children, is it good enough for your own child?
Mm-hmm.
And so when it was good enough for my baby and it was good enough for me as a parent, and I love that baby, I knew that it would be good enough for my scholars and it would be good enough for my teachers. But the thing that I love about it, and I keep going back to this, is it is an adult first model. Yeah. We got to think about how we showing up in spaces, because that's important. How are you? And I want it for adults to start humanizing themselves, and my educators to start humanizing themselves and recognize their own emotions, their own areas for growth, their own strengths, their own talents. Because that is a lot of conscious discipline is also relationship. And so you got to be able to show up as your authentic self. Well, you can't show up as your authentic self if you don't know your authentic self. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That really impacted how we started to build this program. And even as we are getting ready to start the parent component, there's another, my counselor is going to spearhead that, but I'm going to just start with a small group of parents because word travels fast. And I want to make sure that, you know, that parents have someone that they can go to, that they can identify in the community. Did this work for you and why? And tell me about it in your house. Because again, you know, we have to have that coalition of the willing, and then we roll out to everyone. We roll out to the entire village.
Yeah. Wow. Powerful. Yeah. And that authenticity piece, you know, I really don't want to like people to underestimate that, because I remember when I chose, because there was a period of time where, especially in the beginning, where, you know, there was just like so much, there's so much fear around like raising children and childcare and all that stuff. And I remember when I decided to just start being more of my authentic self and actually start bringing me more to the table, and how much of a shift that was, not only in how I connected with the children and how I was able to kind of guide them, but also in how I felt about the work, and how I felt going to work. And so, like, you know, remembering to be your authentic self, even as you're learning new tools to put in your tool belt, I can't overstate how important that is. So you already had people in the building before you even showed up, right? You might've been the, you know, new person on the block. And, you know, if, especially if you were quote unquote, a, you know, struggling school. I know a lot of times leadership, sometimes there's a lot of turnover there. Maybe that was the case. Maybe that wasn't, but regardless, you come into it with all these different people, with all their own CD-ROMs, with their own, you know, everyone's playing their own songs, you know, and genres of music, because people come from different cultures, you know. And my question is, how do you kind of, it's kind of a two-part question. How do you kind of help people with their CD-ROMs when everyone's kind of on somewhat of different pages, coming from different places, maybe even, you know, different cultures or pockets of culture? How do you kind of address all of that in a school family? Like, I imagine you got some pushback because of that, because it didn't align with the mental models they were currently working with. So how can you talk to me a little bit about, this is the fun part, tell me about the pushback and how you kind of navigated that.
This is going to be, this, people are probably going to slam us for this, but I did not have any pushback that I knew of.
What?
Not any. Here's why. Okay. Again, we started with the coalition of the who, the willing. Yeah. So there's nothing to push back on if you actually want to do this. And then all the other teammates in our school had an opportunity to see it work. And we learned about it before they were required to roll it out. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, and the thing that I really love about conscious discipline is that it works with both sides of your brain, right? So there are some very scientific research that goes along with this conscious discipline work.
Yeah.
And then there's also that very touchy side, the, for those of us who, you know, like to do a lot of touchy feel stuff, and they don't necessarily need the nuts and the bolts and the meat and potatoes, that other side works for them as well. So there's a little something in conscious discipline for everybody. Mm. And the thing that I love about it is that it's loose enough that people can implement it in their own little way. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And so there's some structure around what I would like to see. There's some time frames on when I would like to see it. But for the most part, I allow them the autonomy to do what they feel is best in their classroom. So I trust their professional judgment until I have been given a reason not to. And I haven't been given a reason not to. So there was really no reason for them to push back, because by the time it was required for the whole building, it had been kind of slowly rolled out into the culture of who we were. That's one thing. Also, we do mission and vision work together. So we think about, what is our end goal? What do we want to see? What do we want our building to look like? What do we want the house to sound like? What do we want our villagers to think of us? What do we want to give to children and their families, right? So once we kind of map all of that out together, not me by myself, because that's where the pushback comes from.
Yeah.
People can't see themselves in the work that you're doing. That's why they're in disagreement. I'm not trying to disagree with you. I'm trying to work with you. Yeah. And really, you're the one who got to do the work. So they come up with the mission. They come up with the vision. And then together, we come up with a plan of action for how we're going to get this work done. And conscious discipline made sense for what we wanted to do for our building. And if it ain't broke, you don't fix something, right? And so if we see that something is working, we work it. So that's basically kind of what happened. I think that because we rolled it out in the way that we rolled it out, there was really no reason for people to give us pushback around it. I would say that there have been times as a young leader, and I think I'm still a young leader, by the way, but as a younger leader, I say, we're going to do this program, and this is what you're doing. This is when you started, and this is, and you're so hard and fast about a thing, that's when you're going to get pushback. But when you roll things out gracefully and gently, and people see the results, and the results are positive, they want to be a part of that. And they get a chance to buy in by putting their own, you know, for lack of better words, two cents into it. So once they put them, they can see themselves in the work that we're doing, that's when they have an investment. I cannot push back on something that I've invested in. It's counterproductive.
Mm. Well, I'm that defiant kid, and I'm gonna try to push back a little bit more on you. You know, were there any moments?
Go ahead.
Great, I know you are. Were there any moments of where, you know, people's, maybe their upbringing, you know, which, or their kind of like models of like, okay, well, that's disrespectful, like where they had a hard time not taking it personally, right?
Of course.
And so was there anyone who was like, well, you know what? I should take this personally because this kid said this to me. And, you know, was there ever any of that at all?
I don't think that that's pushback. I think that that's being human.
Yeah.
And so I guess if that's the question, then I guess I'm people. Because it was tough, but I felt that way, right? Yeah. you know, I think that sometimes people think that like teachers or principals, assistant principals are somehow void of actual emotion. Yeah. Or we should somehow not feel a thing in the way that everybody else does. And they hold us to this higher standard. And I'm here to take that away from my school, at least. That's not the case. We're going to fall short. We're going to feel a feeling. But the thing about it is the reflection piece.
Mm.
The reflection piece is what makes all the difference. I'll tell you a quick story. So one day, this little boy, he was sitting outside of one of his elective classrooms. And I went upstairs and I had had a bad day and I was on fire. And I saw him outside that classroom and I immediately went into fuss mode because I'm triggered.
Yeah.
One thing that I cannot stand is seeing children in the hallway because it's not safe and nobody's out there to watch you. And the child blows up. Well, I've blown up. The child blowing up.
Yeah.
Now we're in an explosive situation. Immediately when that baby blew up, I recognized that this is a thing that didn't really have anything to do with me. I didn't handle that situation correctly. When I went into a empty classroom. Well, it's not an empty classroom. It was a classroom that wasn't being utilized at that time. I went in behind him. I just sat there with him. He had already sat down. He began to sob. Not a little sob. He's probably about your height, maybe a little few more pounds than you. He began to sob.
Okay.
And I was convicted in my spirit because all of the things that I knew about conscious discipline had escaped me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was having a bad day. And I could have taken that personally. He's a child. He's a male child. And you're raising your voice. You're being disrespectful. When really, that anger was a secondary emotion. The first emotion was hurt. So something had happened. They were discussing something in that class that triggered him. He removed himself from that situation. Like I would have told him to do.
Yeah.
So he's doing what I asked him to do, but I didn't have the quick sense to ask him a quick question. Why are you out here? I lost my composure. I immediately started handing out consequences.
Mm.
I was not assertive. I was aggressive.
Mm.
So when I got home, I often have these reflections in my car. And I was able to rein him back in that particular day. But as a leader, as an educator, as someone who sits in that baby's village, I had to sit with myself. And I had to reflect and I had to know I didn't handle that baby right. So if you're asking, do we have situations like that? Yes, we do have situations where children might not be at their best selves and a teacher might not be at their best self. Or I might not be at my best self. That happens because we are human. What also happens though is the reflection. When I sit with myself, do I have enough knowledge in my toolkit to recognize what I could have done differently?
Mm-hmm.
And do I have enough of a relationship or can I expose myself enough as a human to go back and apologize?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wouldn't call that pushback. I would call that everybody just being their authentic self and everybody being human, and all days ain't gonna be good days. The sun shines every single day, but sometimes the sun is gonna rise every single day, no matter what. Some days are sunnier than others still, right? And so when you think about conscious discipline, some days we're more conscious and our discipline than others, but that doesn't mean that it's void. It doesn't mean that the sun didn't rise. It doesn't mean that I'm a conscious discipline educator. It means that I had a lapse in judgment. I need to go sit with myself. I need to have some reflection. I need to be in community with some other folks that do this kind of work. And so I can show up better the next day. And that's it.
And that reflection piece, like, is so huge because, yeah, I've had moments like that too. And sometimes I've even kind of remember being in some of those moments, because even when you're like, okay, that didn't go the way that I expected it or wanted to, right? And sometimes, you know, you might feel bad about it. Like, you know, I remember times where I kind of went into blame mode, right? Like, well, this kid's, they just wouldn't have, you know? And it can be easy to get into that. And it's really a practice and reflecting where you're not just putting it on, or you're not just blaming or just absolving yourself of responsibility and blaming the child or teacher or whoever it is. And that's where
that's a lot of power to be given a child, by the way.
Right. Over you, right? And like, that's where I think, you know, if I'm trying to be reflective right now, I think that's where the pushback actually really lives. You know, it's in the, a lot of times it's, at least I can say for me, and sometimes in, you know, in conversations I've had with other people, a lot of times the pushback is because we're not able to reflect, or we don't have those things in our tool belt, or we don't have the information to really reflect and be like, ah, oh, you know what? I did play my part in that role, right? Even that other person may have done things that, you know, they, you know, that was hurtful to other people, but, you know, what role did I play in it? What role did I play in escalating that? And that apology too. I think there's so much power in being able to apologize, because that's where you can talk about, like, what you, not only take responsibility for what you did, not only model taking responsibility for your actions, but also talk about what you're going to do better next time and make that commitment to do something different next time. And that is that, there is so much, like, that is where the growth is, that reflection and ability to apologize. And you know, like, those are some of the most kind of like powerful things that I would recommend for, you know, if you have a really hard time apologizing to, you know, kids or whoever it is, like, that is really such a springboard for growth, I would say. Because the alternative, a lot of times, is we blame other people and we don't take account. And so we never commit to doing something different next time. And so next time, it's because it was never my fault. It was always this kid's fault. He was standing, sitting outside of the classroom. I don't got to change anything about me. It's him. It's this kid. Right. And so, yeah, I think that's really powerful. Anything else you want to say kind of on building the culture and climate around, you know, any advice you would want to give? You know, I think you gave plenty of advice for other leaders, and even, you know, teachers. And I actually remember being in a teacher role, kind of having a leader who allowed me to kind of take that leadership role and lead the group. And it really did have an impact on the culture and the climate. And I wasn't in that, you know, sitting in the front desk in the front chair. Like, I was another, it was a teacher like everyone else. And so I had that experience, and not only did that allow me to grow, it allowed other people to grow, created, it was so much more effective than if it was just the leader pushing things down. But I want to ask, what about for those villagers out there, right? I'm in the village, you know, and, you know, I send my child to your school who I'm in charge of caring for. And maybe, you know, it's not a conscious discipline school. What advice would you have, you know, as since you are a principal, kind of coming the other way with it, the villagers or a villager wanting to see something like conscious discipline present in the school, you know, what advice would you give? Because you're in a little bit of a different position. I think a lot of times villagers who don't work for the school can sometimes feel like, you know, like sometimes insecure, like I don't, you know what they, the, you know, educators have to deal with. I don't want to overstep or, you know, but I really think that this is important for my child. I work so hard at home to, you know, have, you know, composure and practice empathy and encouragement and choices and all those things. But I don't see it in this part of my, in the school. So like, what advice would you give someone like that?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is to ask if it's okay to get on principal's calendar. Things happen throughout the school. I know that people think that we in here twiddling our thumbs. It is not so. But if things are on a principal's calendar, that means that they have this uninterrupted time dedicated just for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not just springing something on them and now they're feeling the pressure of like listening to you and being respectful to you as a parent, but also having these competing priorities that need to happen at this time. They're expecting you. They'll know what you want to talk about. You may even, if you have an extra book, you may want to leave it with them. So they can just kind of maybe do some pre-work around like, what is this even, what are we even getting ready to talk about, right? Yeah. Once you get there, I think that you maybe want to share like some of the benefits that you have personally, like actual stories or actual things that you do that may have an impact, because trying to implement an elephant at one time is really difficult, especially if a principal doesn't have it on their radar. You know what I'm saying? So you may want to bring just one piece of conscious discipline that you would like to see. And if they would consider starting maybe a book study or starting to learn more about conscious discipline, but certainly understand coming to them with the understanding or explaining to the principal, I really want to partner with you in this work. I thank you for being a part of my baby's village and our family. When you approach somebody in that way, how they gonna turn you away? What they gonna say? Nah, don't here. That is, I think we're all looking for ways to do the work that we do in a better way, right? Especially if we have, and we're looking for help. We are looking for help, you know? And so when you have somebody who wants to come in and say, hey, here's a thing that I have done. It has worked well for my family. I thank you for a part of my family. I want to share it with you. Maybe y'all can, you know, just do this little part right here and see how it works rather than coming in a blaming type of way. Well, what you do working, so here's what I want you to do instead, but coming in a gentle space, coming with a space of gratitude for the work that they do, acknowledging the work that they do, and asking them only to implement maybe a small part, and being willing to help with implementation, right? So oftentimes, folks will say what you need to be doing, what you should doing, and they not they don't have a space in that conversation that says, and here's how I'm willing to help.
Mm-hmm. So what would that look like?
When you have your hand out, you got to be ready to give as well as receive, you know?
Yeah. So, but what would that look like, you know, for a parent? Would be trying to, you know, organize, you know, a book study and bring some parents on? Would that be, you know, purchasing some conscious discipline structures? Like, what do you think would be kind of like the best, or give us kind of like a few things, or, you know, if there's anything else you can add to that?
So I think that it really depends upon the culture of that building, the personality of the person who is, who wants to introduce it. Because for me to say something like, well, it would be nice if you would tell teachers how this works for you. Well, that person might be incredibly shy. That person might be an introvert, and I'm asking them to really step outside of their comfort zone. What they may be able to do is provide some research, or they may be able to share in a one-on-one space how this worked for their baby, or they may be able to sit with you to thought partner and brainstorm some ideas on how we can begin this work. So it really, you have to think about where your areas of strength are. Yeah. And then you can make a determination on how you're willing to help. So you got to always think about, where can I thrive and not just survive? So if I want to bring something to you, but it's really not my one area of expertise, I may have just heard about it, or I may be doing a little part of it, but I don't know it well enough to teach anybody, or I'm not comfortable in my heart space and in my spirit, well, that's not going to be successful, right? Yeah. So, you know, I can't really give a prescribed way that villagers could come to the school. What I can say is that they should come, number one, in gratitude for the work that educators have to do. Number two, with suggestions. And number three, with a willingness to help or support in any way that they can or feel comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. 100% agree. 100% agree. Last question, and I gotta talk about it, and just kind of hear what your thoughts are on it, and hear if there's in your school, if there's any, if you heard any of this conversation, or because I, you know, I'm online, and so I hear people from all over, you know, say all types of things, and it's pretty easy to say whatever when you're behind a screen or whatever. But a really common criticism that I hear and see online with any of this kind of
conscious.
Why don't you ask yourself the question? I'll ask.
Does conscious discipline work for Black folks?
That's the question.
That's the question.
That's the question.
I'm folks and I'm Black. So
what about your kids? What about the kids at your school?
So the community that I work in the Inglewood community. And so the vast majority of my population is children of color. So I would say maybe about over 90% of my children are African-American. I have a small percentage of Hispanic children, and then I have a population of other, right? Mm-hmm. So does this work on children of color? Absolutely, because we're doing it here in Inglewood. Now, I think it's fair to be transparent and say that we haven't really seen ourselves in this work as much as we would have liked to, right? But the one thing that I really do love about conscious discipline, Dr. Becky Bailey, is that she recognized the need, and now we are all working together. And we saw that at Conscious Discipline with Excellence, like really working together to ensure that we see ourselves in this work that has been happening for years. It's been happening for years, but in terms of the marketing, in terms of the videos, things of that nature, you don't often see lots of children of color, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work for them. Asking, does this work for children of color, is like asking, are these pants for Black people? Mm. Well, if they can fit the pants, yes. You know what I'm saying? If not, then no. But it doesn't have anything to do with the color of the skin of the person putting on the pants.
Yeah.
If it fit, it fit. If it didn't, it didn't. And that's, so, you know, either way is okay. Also, it's, and I want to choose the right words, but asking if brain research works for children that look like you and I is maybe a little troubling. Because our children have brains, our children have hearts, so do we. And asking if the research is going to be different for our children, years and years of research, why would our children be so different that brain research doesn't work.
Yeah.
Our children's brains don't have color. Mm. And I think that with every school, and this is school by school, family by family, the culture of who we are is different.
Mm.
So you can have two very white families that are not raised alike at all.
Yeah.
I can have two black families. And I learned this at an HBCU. I live in Chicago, and Chicago is very segregated. And I didn't know that there were all these different types of black families and how they interact and engage with one another. I didn't recognize that the color of your skin does not determine how you are raised and what the culture of your community is like. I did not know that as a young person. And so I want to really spread that word that just because you are a certain ethnicity does not determine if a thing will or will not work for the culture of your community. I hope that makes sense, yeah. What I'm saying.
Yeah.
And the group of scholars and educators that I'm working with, we probably need it the most.
Yeah.
We are experiencing trauma at alarming rates. And this was before the pandemic. Let me be clear. In a space of lack in terms of financial deficits, medical deficits, safety deficits, educational deficits, when you start putting all of those things together, certainly you are going to have some trauma. When you have trauma, there is a need for a social and emotional intervention, period.
Yeah.
It just so happens that my kids are Black. Mm-hmm. But what we are noticing across the nation, not just in our communities, is that we have to do something differently to address the trauma that our children have faced. That is not just a Black problem. Now, are my children experiencing this trauma at alarming rates? And have we been experiencing it at alarming rates way before right now? Probably. Matter of fact, absolutely. The data just says what it says. You know what I'm saying? The data says that we have been experiencing trauma.
Yeah.
And because we have been trauma, that is how I know that we need something like this, our toolkits, to be able to properly educate our scholars. And when I'm talking about educating my babies, I am not just talking about reading math, science, and social studies. I'm talking about intergenerational work that is going to transcend into houses, children, communities that I will never, ever meet. Because now I'm giving something to a baby who will give it to their baby, who will give it to their baby, who will give it to their baby. So I'll never see those children. I will never see those children. But what I can do is put some things in their toolkit that will help them to be successful people. And people don't have anything to do with the fact that they happen to be Black. Because they Black, they need that toolkit more than ever, more than their peers. And that is just me being honest. I don't know if I should have said that as a principal, but it's my truth. So I'm gonna have to stand in it.
Mm. Well, you know, I'm gonna stand in it with you, and I'm not gonna let you be alone. And I'm gonna add to this, you know, and this is for, you know, this is, you know, I'm not even necessarily gonna say for Black children specifically, or I'm going to say any marginalized group, any group that is, you know, that is ignored or looked at as aggressive or not important when they try to advocate for themselves and you need skills like self-regulation even more, because it's the likely, especially if you're always You know, if you're living in survival mode, you need to know how to be aware of that and access that prefrontal cortex maybe a little bit more than someone who is living comfortably, right? If you're in the workplace and, you know, like if you are already seen as intimidating, right, and you get mad at something, you blow up, you get angry, the consequences might be greater or it might be seen different. And so you need those self-regulation skills, maybe even more, so that you can navigate these spaces successfully, and you're able to self-regulate and advocate and articulate yourself well and really be able to connect with others in a way where their threat detector isn't going off and they're responding to you, you know, with threat. And, you know, I talked about the workplace, but, you know, we can talk about things like, you know, situations with police officers, right? And, you know, if their threat detector is going off a little bit more because of the way you look, then it's in your best interest to have the skills to not project threat and to project safety, and to be able to be in your own self-control, to have that composure, so that you make it out of that situation alive. And that is a lot of times, that's the counter argument, like, oh, like I need to be harsher on my children, have these harsh punishments so that they, when they're in these situations, they can be obedient. But really what's happening is, you know, if we are doing that, we are becoming like, they don't need we don't need to worry so much about the oppression of the world if we become the oppressor in fear of oppression, right? So I'm going to just stand in that truth with you.
I told this story before, but as a young AP, I was in a professional learning session, and the social worker at the time, tall, big guy, he said, children learn fill in the blank when they're hungry. Children cannot learn when they're hungry. And so I think that sometimes when you hear that, you will think that when children are hungry for food, children can learn when they're hungry for safety. Children can learn when they're hungry for touch. Children can learn when they're hungry for dependability. Children can learn when they are hungry, not living in a survival state. Children cannot learn, when all of these things, when they're hungry for a multitude of things. And he didn't say Black children can't learn under these circumstances. He said children cannot be circumstances. And it's so funny that you would talk about composure, because I have my conscious discipline book out, but it says stress at young ages has the potential to wire children to be hypersensitive toward emotional and survival state reactions throughout life. Mm-hmm. So when you think about how our children sometimes have to endure the things that are going on around them, we got to put something in their toolkit. When you even think about the riots that happened this time last year, nobody talks about them anymore. But guess what? The results of some of those riots are still in our neighborhood. They never rebuilt them. So it's a constant visual reminder of a traumatic situation that has become normal. And how do we not, in good faith, in good conscience, sleep well at night, know these things and not give them something to combat that as they become young men, young women, and positive contributors to society at some point. At some point, they're going to be somebody's mom or dad. They're going to live in our communities. They're going to work in our communities. And we haven't fixed the thing that happened. We haven't addressed the stress that they had at a young age. That's my job here at the elementary school level.
That's so powerful. I'm loving the work that you're doing. And you know, that is such a great way to end this. Such a great conversation, so powerful. I know that I don't think that you're like selling. This is usually a time where I'm like, hey, plug your thing. I don't think you're selling anything. But if there's any last words you want to say to the world or anything, like last note you want to share before we
close. The one thing that I want to say to the world is that I know that most districts are out. We're still in, but most districts are out. But if you get a chance, send a little love to your educators who have been educating these scholars over these last few years. It has been an extremely trying time, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Your scholars, educators, your scholars, your babies, your young learners, they are people, but also your educators are people, and they have really done a miraculous work these last few years. And what people really want is to feel appreciated. And so if you have an opportunity, send them a little love, say that you're thankful, that you're appreciative. And I'm almost sure that it will make their entire day that somebody acknowledge the work that they do and the sacrifice that they had to make to ensure that your young scholar could learn in a safe and healthy environment. So I'm not selling anything, but if I can have one ask of folks, it is to be intentional about showing love and appreciation to the folks that teach and help raise our young people.
Love it. You don't care for the adults, you know, the children aren't cared for. That's something that you said at the conference too.
What's my name? What's my name? What's